Hello, everyone. I'm not going back out to the crash site anytime soon. After I dropped off the boat, sometimes I think about that boat, and I think of it as a capsule. The crash site really was kind of a living in a Mars moon colony. I had this lady that I knew up in Mora, New Mexico. She was working at the Forestry Research Center, which was one of my technical responsibilities, is to keep up their networking and things like that. Anyway, and she got involved with this group of people. I don't know how actually official it was, but she was getting compensated. She was getting paid something, and they were trying to simulate the conditions of living on Mars. So they have all these people, a handful of people, that basically lived in these kind of spacecrafty structures for long periods of time to figure out if they would go insane and start killing each other and stuff like that. I think it was basically an experiment to see if they would turn into something akin to the Donner Party. I don't know. Anyway, she made me think about such stuff. So when I bought my property out there, it's a little acre, and it's out in the middle of nowhere. It is of no value whatsoever, except that, you know, it didn't have any restrictions on it. You could do anything you wanted to on your acre. And it was relatively close to Socorro, where I had gotten a job during COVID. And it paid, it paid several tens of thousands of dollars more than the job I had. And the pay basically came from the fact that they had to attract somebody to do it. So, I took the job. I found this piece of property pretty shortly because I needed to have some place to sleep during the week, because it was an 8-hour a day, 5-day a week job. It was almost 200 miles away from Tucumcari. You don't do that as a daily commute. You just don't. So I rigged it for a weekly commute by buying this piece of property. It's a little acre out in the middle of the desert, and I could get to it. So I spent a little bit of time actually sleeping in the vehicle that I had. There's a whole story behind the vehicle that I had that I didn't end up having for all that long. Anyway, it doesn't matter. I did that for a little while. I bought a geodesic dome. It was made out of PVC pipe. And you guys saw the pictures of the pieces lying around that I guess the cows stomped on. And let me tell you, I put this whole situation together in about a week and a half. I bought the piece of property, got the dome, went out there, set up the dome out there, and on the way to doing it, I stopped by a big building supply place outside of Albuquerque, and I got myself a huge roll of thick polyurethane, not thick enough, I've got to say. the thickest I could get, about 6 mil. Anyway, and over a weekend, you know, I was still working my old job. I don't often put great periods of time between jobs. You know, I'll keep working one job, and then I'll fill out my 2 weeks or so, and then the next Monday I start the job. So that weekend I put together, I put together this thing, and my intention was to sleep in it. So in the course of that weekend, I did that. I got myself a little bed frame, cheap bed frame from Walmart, and a memory foam mattress, and ta-da! I had a place that I intended to sleep. I didn't know how long it was going to last. I was hoping it was going to last longer than it did. But it wasn't a problem with the actual PVC dome itself. It was made to be a greenhouse in nice settled places where there is no wind. It's built by some fella. I think he was in like Georgia or Tennessee or North Carolina, someplace in the South. And, you know, it was not made for wind at all. In fact, they even said so when they did it, that you're really going to have to tack this thing down. And I just grabbed sandbags and put them across the struts that formed kind of the base of the dome. And I thought that would be sufficient. Well, the only problem is domes have a bad idea of being just kind of a different shape of kite. And so I had all this stuff set up, got it done on a Saturday, got the whole thing kind of worked out. I didn't do the sandbags yet. Anyway, so I built the thing out there, and I didn't really bother tying it down. That was the problem. And when I came back on, you know, when I finally got back to the place on, like, Monday night, it was gone. It had disappeared. And, of course, this was in winter. It was cold. It snowed. So I was out there after my first day or two of work. Actually, no, I think I got the timing totally wrong. Because I do remember that I went out there during, I was working for a university, therefore you get a winter break. And so during this truncated winter break I had, that was when it flew away. The wind finally kicked up and it actually blew about 1,000 yards away and over a fence. And so it was torn up. Luckily, it didn't break anything, just incredibly vital. I could, whatever damage there was, I could put on a different part of the dome where it wasn't that big of a problem. And I was able to put the thing together, back together. I got a bunch of T-posts, put a fence around it. That was the other problem there was going to be, because there's cows out there, and cows get into everything. So you have to fence them out. And I fenced them out, and I tied the dome down to the fence, and you guys saw some of that in the video. Anyway, so I'd done that for quite a while. I was still using the polyurethane that I'd used before that really wasn't up to the job. It was getting really yellowed and weathered, and I was spending this thing was actually engineered, and let me tell you, to call it, it was really a creative structure, not by me, but by the guy that I bought it from. Cost about $600 or $700 for all the PVC cut to the right dimensions and everything else. Hubs and spokes and all that fun stuff. And And it was made so that you could use zip ties. It's called a zip tie dome. You can look it up on the internet. It's there, and you can get one if you really want one. It's got some inherent problems. I won't say I won't say too much bad about it for the simple reason that it actually withstood two years of use. Anyway, so I was sleeping under it for a while there. I bought a nice round rug and of course my bed frame and the thing and the Bimmy foam mattress. And it was pretty good, except it was really noisy. It would every breath of wind would catch my cover because it wasn't very taut, and it really can't be because it's trying to attach kind of a square, a square flat piece of plastic to this kind of rounded structure, and you did it with zip ties, and it worked reasonably well, except for I don't think the cover I got was really good for this, especially in this wind. The polyurethane cover was just between sun and wind and, had a few snows and weather and stuff like that. It just wore out and started splitting. And it wasn't being a really good cover for it. I finally got it's the kind of black tarp that they use on loads that go on tractor trailers. And I got one of those at a real big discount, a really big one, 25 feet by 50 feet. And I put it on there. Of course, it was black. Couldn't see a thing. There was no light. And even in the wintertime, it was hot. It's hot. It just collected heat like crazy. And of course, out in the desert, which is hot anyway. And I knew it was going to very quickly get very, very hot. By this time, I had sold the vehicle I could sleep in. Traded in for a little Mitsubishi Mirage, the car that I called Sandy, because out there's plenty of places where it's kind of got some sand dune sorts of things, and the streets, and these are, they're called streets, but they were just cow trails, mostly, except they were in straight lines, and You were doing dune buggy stuff, and of course this thing is low slung. It was never made for this kind of environment at all. It was made to be kind of an in-town commuter car, and I was using it out here, basically treating it like a glorified dune buggy. My biggest concern in all of this stuff was to have something that would stand up to the elements, and the rig that I had wasn't going to stand up to the elements. This dome wasn't designed for these kinds of conditions. And I did all these things, and what I ended up accomplishing was I had a dome that kept out all of the elements much better, but it was totally unusable as a place to sleep. Just completely unusable. So I was trying to figure out what to do, and I was doing it based on what I saw around me. This is a big, huge swath of area that way back in the 60s, the early 60s, was carved up into one-acre lots with streets planted out. Most of the streets didn't exist. The actual street that mine abuts to, actually my what's supposed to be the access never became a street because the people who bought stuff out there never came out to do anything. It was all sold off as an investment in the expansion of Albuquerque. And Albuquerque did not expand to the south. It expanded to the north. And so all of this land was garbage. It was bought up by various people. One guy on one side of me has a very Arabic name. Probably bought by some guy back east who thought he was going to get rich buying this for next to nothing and then selling it for several $1 million because somebody would put some nice house on it. Never happened. But it works fine for me because it was still on the cheap side. I bought that anchor for $1,500. I know you can get them for less than $500, but I was in a hurry and I didn't have a chance to really do a ton of research before I had to have some sort of a situation. And I'm cheap. So, I started looking around at what other people had done. A lot of sheds made out of pallets. This was also complicated by the fact that I had a little compact car to work with for hauling around materials, stuff like that. And the really compact car came in really, really handy. I used it as a truck a few times. But its biggest thing was to be economical, and it was. It's fantastic. I finally destroyed this vehicle just about 7 or 8 months ago. And then I just had to get a whole other vehicle. Anyway, so, truck this time. You guys saw the truck. Okay. Oh! For everybody who wants to know about W5JSN, that is a license plate for amateur radio operators. I'm an amateur radio operator. I've got my amateur extra license, and that's my call sign. It's just that simple. Everybody thinks, oh, it's a vanity plate. You go, no, it's not a vanity plate. Now the call sign I have, W5JSN, that is a vanity call sign. Usually when you get a call sign as a radio amateur, you just get the next one on the list. When I got my amateur extra, my call sign was AG5AH, which was just the next call sign assigned. And I got that, and it was fine. I used it for a while. But then I kind of got a little bug, and I had heard that you could do this. And people usually want one that's more memorable or one that is their initials or stuff like that. And I just happened to look at these things are auctioned off. Boy, we got a lot of state highway cops out today. What's the deal? And he's not passing me. Why is that? Well, now he is. Okay. I think he was looking to see if he could find some reason to pull me over. Waving at these guys is usually a bad idea, but I do it anyway. Because you don't want to attract their attention particularly. I was doing 60 miles an hour. This car doesn't have cruise control. So I just have to know what 60 feels like on a 55, and he's doing 80, so it's like, nothing to it. Anyway, I'm sorry. And so, yeah, I just happened to look, and there was an auction up for W5JSN. The W is a country designation. The United States has A, the letter A, K and W, which was the, which goes with all the radio stations. If you have a radio station west of the Mississippi, it's usually a K radio station. KTLA! That's where the K's come from. You say, why do you have K in front of them? It's just because that is radio country code. Anyway, and so W is one of them. For amateur radio, it doesn't have to be on one side of the Mississippi or the other. It doesn't matter. And also N, the letter N, or at least some of the letter N. Anyway, and every and in the United States is divided up into 10 regions. And that's where comes the second character. So W5, I'm in region 5. Now, when you're doing vanity call signs, you don't have to stick with the region you're in, but just for fun, it just happened to be the region that I live in is region 5 of the FCC radio call sign allocations. Anyway, so that's cool. And then it has JSN. And it's always been an interesting thing in my life. It's not only my initials, it's all the consonants in my first name. So that when you read it, it sounds like my first name, too. K5JSN, Jason. That's always been kind of interesting to me. You can actually look at a calendar, and if it just gives you the first letters of all the months, you'll see my name in there. July, August, September, October, November. Jason. So I was given this name, and it's of course my initials, Jason Scott Nemro, JSN. I don't know why. It's some kind of cosmic conjunction that my name resides in, but there it is. And so, yeah, W5JSN is my amateur radio call sign. And for license plate ways, I am considered a public service because I can communicate when everything else is down. I don't have my radios in my vehicle yet, or one of my radios. There comes the plate, not a vanity plate. I didn't dream this garbage up. This is actually my official amateur radio FCC call sign. So, and New Mexico is one of the states that recognizes this as a public service. And so they came up with plates so that you could identify an amateur radio operator, and if you say, oh, I'm having problems, I need to contact my family, the amateur radio operator can help you do that. Get messages to your family when you're stuck somewhere where there's no other way to really do it. You know, amateur radio is one step up from smoke signals. It's still being used. Everybody, you know, it's a bunch of old guys who did it back when it was an interesting hobby. I'm always late to things. Anyway, so okay. That's just to answer that one thing about W5JSN. Hopefully it didn't take too long. All right. Back to the whole story of the boat. So I have this situation that I had gotten this tarp and I couldn't bring myself to sleep inside this thing. In the pitch black dark, just wasn't my thing. Even with the light in there, it was wind, it was hot, it was both hot and cold at the same time. Not the same time, but you know, whatever was hot outside, it was hotter than heck inside of it. And whatever was cold outside, it was colder than a. I had a situation. I have a really good sleeping bag, so the cold isn't a problem. The hot was going to be a problem. And that was, and it was coming to the season where that was going to be an issue. So, I looked around. Most of these guys had brought old, I don't know if when they bought them they were old, broken down RVs. Once they got parked out on some of these 1 acre lots, they got broken down pretty fast. Usually because cows would tear them up, and they would put all kinds of things around to try to keep people out of them. But a couple of guys, now, they just parked their boats out there. I didn't have any inkling that they might have been actually sleeping in them. I don't think they did. They were mostly motorboats, speedboats, little stuff. a lot of these places got used as, a lot of these lots got used as kind of junkyards. People would go, and it was cheaper than getting a storage building. Of course, it's open air. If you wanted to spend the money to put a structure on it and put your stuff in the structure, that was up to you, I guess. A lot of guys didn't do that. People didn't do that. Anyway, so I started thinking about it, and I said, you know what? And I looked at RVs, and RVs, number one, are really expensive. Number two, the taxes and registration on them are really high. You know, these are the sorts of things that, I don't know, New Mexico, I guess, thinks that rich people have them. And and so it's kind of structured that way with the government, you know. To get a registration tag is really expensive. And the annual taxes were terrible. Well, I just, you know, and I said to myself, wait a minute. I said, some of these boats come on trailers. And, you know, I had worked at sea in the past, and so I had a little bit of an understanding of at least what kind of boats were out there. And I had read some articles where people had started living on boats because many people abandon boats. They are very expensive to maintain. They're a terrible way, honestly, to live, because they're just dissolving all the time, especially the old wooden boats. And so there was some of these people who were people who lived on boats. And it was an interesting group of people. And digital nomads, people who can live almost anywhere because they have kind of a remote job, these are getting more difficult to get because governments thought that digital nomads were going to be this wonderful new cash cow to have them living in their country. And they found out that digital nomads are cheap, plasty people that don't really contribute to your economy significantly at all. In fact, I'm not going to say they're most, it doesn't matter. Anyway, some of them lived on boats. So I said, huh. I said, the only difference between me living on a boat in some harbor or marina or something like that and living on a boat in the middle of the desert is that I need some wheels underneath it. Well, there is a certain class of boats, and mine is pretty much one of the larger sort of boats that are called trailer sailers, and they are made to be kept away from the water and stored away from the water. You don't just go and you rent kind of a slip at a marina and it just lives there. You don't do that. You know, you take it off and you take it someplace else. And so they tend to be smaller, lighter. They aren't as tough as ocean-going sailboats, for instance. Just kind of a little, it was built as, mine is, as I better give you the type of it. It's a 1984 MacGregor 25. And it's a 25-foot sailboat. It was made to be kind of like a weekender. It's kind of like going and I compare it to the kind of campers that you would put in the back of a pickup truck and strap down to it to go out for kind of a weekend. You know, and so it really equates to one of those things. And I said that would be perfect for me. So I went and looked on Craigslist. That's where everybody goes for stuff that people don't really want anymore, but that they aren't going to put out a real big, you know, they aren't going to pay a lot of money to advertise what they're trying to get rid of. And this guy down in Truth or Consequences, which was about an hour and a half south of Socorro, and there's a lake there, Elephant Butte Lake, just off of the Rio Grande River, and he was selling this boat. Now, I didn't know anything about McGregor's or anything like that. It was just a sailboat. It had an enclosed cabin in it, and that's what I was looking for, was an enclosed cabin. As I was thinking about it, I said, this is really good. In a place where a lot of cows are wandering around, and if you have anything that's connected to the ground, they're going to tear it up. A boat is fantastic. It's got a hull on it. Cows can't climb into a boat because there's a hull around it. It really worked out really well. So I bought it, and I got me just a really small U-Haul truck to haul it from Truth or Consequences up to the craft site, and parked it there. And I actually used the dome with the tarp on it, which I lovingly called the blister. It made more sense back when it was kind of a translucent cover on it, because it really did look like a blister. When it had the black tarp over it, it didn't look like a blister at all. It looked like this black thing. Anyway, so I took all the stuff off of the boat. It was actually a complete boat. It had all the mast and all this stuff. I think there was at least 12 life preservers in it. You know, for put on life vests and stuff like that. And it just had a whole bunch of stuff in it. This guy had sold it complete. It was ready to go on the water. Of course, he laughed because he said, so where are you taking this? I said, oh, it's just up to Socorro. He goes, there's no place to boat Socorro. And he goes, I'm just going to park it out there. And he thought I was insane. And that's fine, because I probably am. And so I bought that for a couple. Should I pay for that? $3,000? Yeah, maybe a little bit more. I forget. Much cheaper than an RV, especially because the tax on a boat is next to nothing. And I only have to pay registration every 3 years. It's $35 for the 3 years. And I know you guys are saying, boy, I wish I could get an RV that costs that much. I said, if you don't care how it looks, and if you don't care how people stare at you, a boat is actually a pretty decent RV. I basically bought it as a hard shell tent. Over the years, I have camped out a lot with some of the work I do. I finally got tired of sleeping in motels because it cost a lot, and I got paid a standard rate for every night I overnighted, and I was trying to be cheap, and I found out that most of the places where I worked, I had a New Mexico State Park nearby. Those are nice because they had upgraded in the past, and they all had showers, and most people didn't use them. And so I would go over there and I'd take my tent, you know, just a normal little tent that little Boy Scouts use. And I would stay the night there, use varying degrees of not very comfortable sleeping systems. That's why I upgraded to the memory foam mattress when I decided I was going to be living out here a good solid 4 nights a week. I wanted to have a better circumstance, knowing that this was going to be basically the place I was going to sleep most of the time. Anyway, so that was where all this stuff kind of evolved from, was camping at state parks to make bank on per diem, honestly, when I was out traveling. They say, okay, you stay the night there. Here's how we're going to give you $100 to stay the night. Actually, back then it was probably about $70 a night to stay at some cheap motel. And I would go out to the state park, which was $10 a night, and if you got an annual pass, which I only did a couple of times, It only costs $180 a year to sleep out there. And I had done that on several occasions when I started working back at Cannon Air Force Base after I was at Oklahoma City. There was, how many months did I not have any place to live back in Clovis area? It's probably close to 3 months. And so I would stay during the week at the state park. And let me tell you, you do that 18 times and you have paid for that annual pass. Then after that, sleeping there is free. And let me tell you, I've had more bad experiences sleeping out in state parks. You know, number one, they're kind of noisy. Number two, they're kind of, I got more tents torn up. I spent more money on tents. I probably spent close to $1,000 over the course of about 10 years on tents that got torn up, mostly by helpful park rangers who were trying to take down my tent for me and ended up destroying it. And it's like, you know, I'm not going to get onto them. So this was to say, and close to Socorro was no state park. There was no state park near there. So I couldn't take advantage of that possibility. Plus, I didn't think I wanted to do that long term. And the job was long term. I stayed there for a year and a half. Long term for me, sorry. And so, yeah, the boat's function was to basically be an incredibly durable tent that people wouldn't mess with. And the sailboat did a fantastic job. If you actually want to know what the sailboat looks like, look up on the internet a MacGregor 25, and you'll see what it looks like on the outside. I would give you a tour of the inside, but I'm not. I think I've got old recordings somewhere that I had done of the inside of the boat. Maybe I'll find one and send one to you guys, but it's send you the link to it. Anyway, and that's where came the boat. I lived in this situation my whole time, or at least most of the whole time. I don't think that I had been out at the crash site for more than 4 or 5 months before I decided to do the boat. And it was my sleeping situation for the next year and a half or so out there. I actually brought it back to Tucumcari when I took the job as the chief information officer at the local college, which was a farce of a job. I'm sure it was mostly because of the way I treated it. Anyway, the one and only chief information officer that Mesa Lands Community College ever had. So what? It was nothing. The pay was good. It was definitely a pay bump, which was the whole point. Anyway, and so the boat stayed there for a while. I got a job at Sandia Labs in Albuquerque, took the boat back out to the crash site, did that circumstance for another 6 months. I only had the job at Sandia Labs for 6 months before a recruiter grabbed me for yet another better paying job at Pantex in outside of Amarillo, Texas. And I tried to set up a boating situation there. That was a whole other story. A terrible fiasco of why you should never get involved with a homeowners association. I got a cheap little lot from an HOA, and I parked the boat there, and I found out a few months after I started doing that the HOA didn't like it, and they were going to fine me or or I needed to come up with several things to make this situation acceptable to them. And that's what an HOA is. It's just basically something that says they won't let you do anything that they find weird or unacceptable. And somebody sleeping in a boat is weird. And they didn't like it. So, anyway, and then after that thing kind of fell apart, I took the boat back and parked it by the side of my house, not quite on the street, but there right by one of my fences. And it stayed there for quite a while. It stayed there until this last week. And I just decided, I had talked to a couple of my friends who had trucks and said, hey, I'm going to haul my boat back out to that. They said, well, whenever you're ready, just let me know, and we'll go and do it. Sounds like an adventure. And you go, okay. And it just never kind of gelled. And I don't know what bug got into my britches to just say, you know what? I've got this truck that I just bought as my kind of commuter vehicle, but once I'm done commuting, I've actually got a little truck. So that's much more useful than the vehicles I had before. Although the gas mileage was excellent on the other vehicles I had before, I had burned through. This was like maybe the second or third vehicle I'd burned through. Just using and using and using and using and doing oil changes. And I got a lecture from one of my friends about the fact that I needed to get the transmission work done on it. And I said, the only guys who want to work on this vehicle and really don't want to is the Mitsubishi dealership in Albuquerque. And I couldn't justify giving it over to the last time I let this dealership do some work for me. It took them 2 months. I didn't have my vehicle for 2 months. Thank goodness I had another vehicle I could actually use. And cost me thousands and thousands of dollars. They were probably just waiting for parts. It wasn't that it took that long to work on it. They didn't have the parts. And I knew that was going to be the problem here. So I just drove this car until it fell apart. Anyway, the boat just went back to the crash site. And you've also seen that the crash site, I already explained this in the video, so I don't have to talk about that. But that's kind of the story of the boat. So now it's back out there. I think I was somewhat motivated by the fact that I wanted to get it to its final resting place, which I didn't want it by the side of my house because that looks trashy enough. My house is trashy enough. I don't need to make it more trashy by having an old broken down boat parked next to it. There's already too much of that kind of business and too scary to begin with. Anyway, so I had to do it before something happened to the trailer. And it's really interesting. I don't know how this happened. I don't know if somebody just happened to sneak by and see the fact that there is kind of a little rubber bumper at the very point of the front of the boat to keep it from getting torn up by all the things you have to do to use a winch to bring it up onto the trailer. It disappeared. It disappeared. I don't know how that worked. I looked all around for it, thinking it had fallen off, but I think somebody came and actually stole it. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It has chewed a hole in the front of the boat, so now it is no longer seaworthy. You would have to do quite a fiberglass job to try to make it so that it was watertight again. which means it's even better suited for the fact that it lives out in the desert. It might be kind of nice, because if it actually created a hole up there, there might be the possibility of air being able to pass through it better. One of the big problems with sleeping in a boat is that it isn't made for airflow at all. And it has a little hatch up front that you can open up to try to get some air through it. But the only problem is when you open up that hatch, rain and all kinds of crap can get inside the boat. And the boat isn't really, you know, I've got a sump pump in, it's true. I've actually even turned it on a couple of times, but I'm not in the position to really make use of that. Nor do I want to try, particularly. Anyway, so it did a really good job of being kind of a rigid, hard tent, which is what I used it for. It originally had a little sit-down. Like I said, it's almost exactly like a camper that you put in the back of a truck bed. It's got the same kind of amenities in it. It's got a little water tank, which I never used, and a little bitty sink, you know, with just kind of a little hand pump to pump water into that sink. It's got a little place where a porta potty goes. The porta potty's still there, but I tore down the walls, one of the walls that kind of gave you some privacy when you were using the porta potty. And I've never used that porta potty. I've always just used a bucket and went to the bathroom in there. Of course, I'm out in the middle of nowhere. My closest neighbors now, there's two of them, they only used to be one, was always on the block side of the boat. I was always on, I guess you'd call it the leeward side. Anyway, if you're talking nautical, and I would go and I would shower out there on the ground by the side of the boat, because there's a good screen for people who couldn't see me. Out of the other direction, couldn't be seen. My boat kind of sits in a little bit of a depression, and so it really can't be seen until you're almost on top of it, which was perfect for me. I wanted a place where I would not be bothered and I wouldn't cause anybody bother. I've been in, like I said, with the whole HOA situation, I've had neighbors who I didn't get along with very well because they made all kinds of demands on me for being their neighbor. You need to do this. You need to take care of this. You need to take care of that. I don't like this. I don't like that. I have had a string of neighbors that I really didn't get along with at all and who were obnoxious and demanding on top of it. Right now, the neighbor we have, she's got dogs. The dogs tear up everything. Her backyard is destroyed. I don't care. I don't give a flip about her backyard. But they tear down the fence and get into my yard. And they had done that a few times, and I tried to stop the dogs from doing it. And the neighbors got really upset because they didn't like the way I was treating the dogs. I go, excuse me, I should shoot your dog. Boy, that didn't make anybody any better. Because I said, if they're in my yard, I don't want them, I'm going to shoot them. And boy, that cold, that, it took me a long time to finally get over that and say, I apologize. I'm not going to shoot your dog, although it's perfectly within my rights to do it if they're on my property. Control your dogs. And they had a terrible, and they got better about putting up better fencing, not really, but on their side to make sure that they didn't have a dog problem. So that's why I kind of like the crash site. I don't have many neighbors at all, and people out there tend to keep to themselves, and I'm grateful. You know, everybody talks about, oh, neighbors are wonderful. We come over, we bake each other cookies and do things like that. We've done that. In every house that we've been at, we've tried to establish good relations with our neighbors. And it's always, almost immediately, become them getting, demanding of us to, spending a lot of money to placate them, and them doing nothing except being obnoxious or having dogs that have caused so many problems. And that's why I don't have dogs, because I have more respect for my neighbors. Because dogs are basically there to annoy your neighbors. You know? Anyway, I apologize. I know many people keep and love their dogs and know that their dogs are wonderful. Lisa's gotten to the point where she's just afraid of all dogs. And she doesn't want anything to do with them. And she had dogs when she was younger. I did too. And I guess we originally, well, I don't want to get into that. Anyway, there's a story of the boat. So yeah, the boat's gone back out there. It's really good for the whole standpoint of, you don't have to worry about animals getting into it, particularly. I keep it closed up, but usually during the summertime, you want to leave the hatch off to take advantage of the cool breezes, and that's a wonderful thing, I tell you. And of course, being out there where there's not a lot of people and almost no lights, you can see the sky, and it's beautiful. It's probably the best place to stargaze that I've ever been, and I've been in pretty good stargazing places. And you see the Milky Way, stuff like that. And it was you could barely hear the coyotes way far away. They didn't really get close. There was this one dog, but he's probably about 3 miles away, and you could barely hear him. And it was probably the most peaceful place to rest that I ever had. And on some levels, I kind of miss it. And so that, along with the fact I didn't know how much longer the trailer was going to last, the tires on it are really old, and I didn't want to have to buy new tires for something that I never use. I'm just not that kind of a guy. And so I was really glad this last time when I drug the trailer out there. The trailer made it. The tires made it. Everything's great. I don't have any intention of moving it again. I know how to orient it on that site so it catches good wind and where it's protected against bad wind that comes screaming out of mountain canyons. It's still rigged for one guy to sleep in and to have a bit of a table there. There's some blog posts. If you have, I'm not going to talk about the blog. I was able to go in there and type in there with the computers that I have to do that. And, it was a nice place to sleep. And a nice situation that was low cost that made the money that I made for New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology was one of the jobs that I was there for a year and a half. And then for the 6 month gig at, Sandia Labs. So if all else fails one day and I just gotta make a lot more money again, I could always go back to working at Sandia Labs and do the commute back and forth. Got a little old. It was an hour off, and I'm not a big fan of working for the government, but I always do because they pay me the best for my situation and my skill set. So anyway, there's the story of the boat, and I hope it didn't take too long. Oh my gosh, it went a whole hour. There it is. And I'm sorry, I know a little video would have taken about 5 minutes, which is what most people worry about. You got probably more of the backstory than you ever wanted. This boat has been a lifeline for me for, guy, how many years now? Well, on and off for probably 6 or 7 years. Four or five. I bought it in 2001, and I used it quite a bit. And now that it's in the middle of 2005, it's good that I parked it out there. So now if something bad happens to it, it happens out there, and it's not a mess that has to be cleaned up. It can just rot out there like everything else out there eventually rots away. But it's on my 1 acre of land, and I might go out there occasionally just for a weekender. If the family ever gets interested, if members of the family want to come out and do stargazing or just want a really interesting getaway, come bring your big family tent. I've got an acre of land. There's plenty of room to put up a tent. There's nothing there. Out by the boat, says I've got water cans to do showers with. Bring your own water. BYOW. And you can explore all around that territory. There's some interesting terrain to hike around in. It's all owned by the people, but they don't apply any ownership to it. So I don't think anybody cares if you wander around. I did when after a tough day, it was like I want to unwind. I'd go walkabout, kind of the old Australian walkabout thing. That's what I do. So that's what I did. Anytime anybody wants to do that, heck yeah. I'll tell you how to get there. You can use it. The old poop bucket is there, so you can use that too. Although once you're done using it, I want you to bury it. And I didn't bring that's what I forgot. I forgot to bring the shovel, so you're gonna have to bring a shovel with you, so that you can bury your waste. You just, you know, I'm a guy. I just pee out in the open. There's not any people out there particularly. I think all of my neighbors have finally decided they've found other circumstances. Their stuff is still there, but they aren't. And so you pretty much got the place to yourselves. And anyway, so yeah. Maybe it'll serve us some good as that. If nothing else, it's very cheap. My property taxes on that acre are $20 a year. I can't think of any place cheaper to store things. I'm pondering maybe trying to resurrect something like the blister. I'm not going to use PVC pipe this time because it started having larger problems and it just wasn't working anymore. Went back to sleeping in the boat. I told that story already. Anyway, okay, that's all I got. Talk to you guys later. Bye.